A recent anonymous proposal specifies a system using time-locked Bitcoin transactions and Chaumian eCash mints to create an economic incentive for BitTorrent users to seed files. Could this breathe new life into the BitTorrent network and other peer-to-peer ecosystems? Let's find out. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. We have got a lovely read today, and as we always have, because it's always been a serious interest of mine, it's been one of the things, one of the staples of the internet in my entire life, are peer-to-peer ecosystems. The protocols and technology that allow direct communication, direct and secure communication. And BitTorrent is basically the poster child. It's the first and most successful peer-to-peer ecosystem, and it was a massive part of the internet and of the incredible disruption of the old industries and the old incumbent media and content delivery institutions. And I want to recommend for anyone who hasn't heard it, and we may actually do a reboot of these at some point, Simon Morris has a phenomenal series from, I guess it's probably 3 years ago on the show that I read it, but The Lessons from BitTorrent. And I think it's a three-part series about, he worked with BitTorrent Incorporated. And so it's basically like, it's not a post-mortem because BitTorrent is still out there, but obviously it's a very small portion of the internet these days. But it's more of a, why did BitTorrent work? What was the edge case that it solved? And what were the incentives, or what were the unique features and elements of it that it had to hold on to in order to make sure it didn't get relegated to the sidelines or fail to serve its most important, its highest value purpose? And the Lessons from BitTorrent series is really about how to think about Bitcoin and how to think about its development and understanding the most important factors going forward, the most important characteristics to retain. Now, I actually argue a little bit against some of what he says. Not that I don't think the lessons are extremely prescient. Like, I think he's 100% right about those things. But I think the one thing that he was missing, and why I did not think it was going to be, or it wasn't going to have the same failure modes of BitTorrent, is because of the economic element. Is that there was a more fundamental economic and monetary element, going back to yesterday's episode where I talked about Seyfeddin's example of gunpowder, that there was something more fundamental going on that wasn't just, oh, are we going to have a peer-to-peer option, or are we all going to use a centralized option? Bitcoin fundamentally provides something that centralized money cannot provide. Whereas file sharing is perfectly, like the accessing of content and media is perfectly easy to do, whether you're centralized or decentralized. And so if the centralized options give you the things that you want and concede to the way you want that content delivered and, you know, at a fair price, well, then they're going to ultimately replace BitTorrent, which is exactly what we saw. But anyway, I highly recommend that series, and I will have the links in the show notes so you can check it out. But today we have a piece from Shinobi, the quick to release and explain best and quickly all the new technology and all the new proposals. And today we have one on Durabit, which is an incentivized simple time lock plus eCash system for incentivizing data availability on the BitTorrent network with Bitcoin. So I will let Shinobi take it away and we will jump right in. First, I just want to thank our sponsors. A huge thank you to Nodeless.io for just making it, like, running your own BTC Pay server is a pain. Running your own Lightning network, Lightning node and channel management, it's just not easy, especially if you're trying to do it at scale and you're trying to run an online store or trying to do a fundraiser or something. You just want it to work, and you don't want to have 10 different homework assignments. Sure, everybody can do it, but they shouldn't need to. And if they're focused on providing something else, there should be a very easy option with the absolute minimal amount of trust involved. Nodeless makes setup and integration incredibly easy. There's no KYC, there's no subscription, there's no obligation, and you can plug it right into whatever you're doing online. And all you do is just give them an address, a Lightning address, or your cold card address, and all the payments will just be forwarded directly to you. It is literally a no-brainer. And speaking of that, you always want to get it into your cold card hardware wallet. You always want it in cold storage. And they are our other amazing sponsor, the makers of the greatest, most cypherpunk of the hardware wallets out there. Truly air-gapped. Keep your Bitcoin safe. Grab yourself a cold card with 9% off. That is with the code Bitcoin Audible. The links and all those goodies are right there in the show notes. So a thank you, a huge thank you to those guys. And a thank you to all of you for subscribing and for sharing this show out. And with that, we will jump into today's article by Shinobi, and it's titled Durabit, Incentivizing Torrent Seeding with Bitcoin, written by Shinobi. A recent anonymous proposal specifies a system using time-locked Bitcoin transactions and Chaumian eCash mints to create an economic incentive for BitTorrent users to seed files. BitTorrent has been around for 22 years as of this year. In many ways, it is a technology protocol almost as big as Bitcoin in the scope of how it changed the game of moving data around the internet. If Bitcoin is the money for sending money around when people don't want you doing so, BitTorrent is the mechanism for moving data around when they don't want you to. It's always had a big problem, though, one I'm sure anyone who has ever used it is quite familiar with. The seeding problem. How many of you, upon completing the download of a file, have immediately closed out your torrent client and didn't leave it seeding after you had the complete file? Everyone has done it. BitTorrent doesn't function without users staying online and seeding a file for others to download, which most users do not do for very long after attaining the complete file. This works whenever a file is in very high demand. People seed the sections of the file they have as they download. They disappear when they're finished, but in the meantime, other people come online and start downloading, and they also seed as they download. It works as long as the group going through that churn is large, but if it isn't, torrents tend to fade away and become unavailable as people stop seeding. This presents a problem for the longevity of individual torrents. It is a great protocol for getting a piece of data circulating while it is in high demand, but after that demand fades, that data tends to become unavailable as people stop seeding it. Durabit is a recent proposal to attempt to address this issue. The scheme is relatively simple, but seems like it would provide a solid incentive mechanism for people to keep seeding a BitTorrent file. The system depends on a Chaumian eCash mint to facilitate the incentive mechanism for file seeders. A third party who wishes to ensure a file stays available enters into a contractual arrangement with the eCash mint, taking the form of a series of time-locked pre-signed transactions. Each transaction is time-locked in intervals of 2 weeks, and pays out a small amount each time to the Chaumian eCash mint. Each payout is a time-locked UTXO that cannot be spent until the next transaction becomes valid, with the remainder of the funds always going back to an address controlled by whoever issued these transactions, with the next transaction in the chain spending this change output. The first transaction in the series commits to a specific torrent magnet link in an opreturn output to associate the contract with the file the issuer wants to incentivize seeding. After the mint has these pre-signed transactions in its possession, it submits the first transaction to the chain and begins monitoring the torrent swarm for the specified magnet link. From here, the mint listens for any torrent clients that also run a Durabit client to reach out to it. If any Durabit client pings the mint from the same IP address as someone it sees seeding in the torrent swarm, it maintains that connection out of band. From here, the mint watches and tracks seeders that have registered with it. During the course of the two-week period before its most recent payout becomes spendable, the Mint issues Chaumian eCash tokens to each registered seeder for keeping the data available. A Mint can do this proportionally to the amount of data seeded, or can randomize token issuance in a lottery amongst the seeders it has registered. Once its payout output becomes spendable, it can announce this and open a redemption window to pay out the actual Bitcoin in exchange for Chaumian tokens it has issued during the seeding epoch. This cycle continues for as long as the series of pre-signed transactions lasts. The overall total amount of Bitcoin contributed to the contract and the amounts paid out each period are entirely up to the issuer of the contract. I'm sure most of you are thinking, what stops the Chaumian Mint from simply just collecting these payouts and not distributing a portion of them to the people seeding the torrent? That is the beauty of the proposal. Purely incentives. Each transaction pays out a small amount of funds to the Chaumian Mint in a time-locked output and spends the rest back to the issuer of the contract. At any time, the party that issued this contract can effectively revoke it by double spending that output, invalidating the rest of the pre-signed transactions from that point forward. The Mint, being aware of this, has to weigh the potential loss of all future income derived from any individual contract by collecting the agreed-upon percentage of each payout for itself against the potential gain of keeping an entire payout while losing that percentage fee for all future payouts. The issuer, on the other hand, was initially motivated to issue the contract in the first place because of a desire to keep a specific file available by incentivizing people to seed it. If they truly want that file to stay available, it's in their best interest to not revoke any contract they've issued unless the Mint fulfilling it is acting dishonestly. This arrangement aligns the incentives properly so that it should be in the best interest of the Mint to monitor the torrent swarm and distribute funds honestly to seeders, and it is in the best interest of the issuer of the contract to not double spend it and revoke it so long as the Mint continues operating honestly. The proposal looks at the problem of actually auditing honesty, both in terms of the Mint auditing seeders it is distributing tokens and payouts to, and the issuer of the contract auditing the Mint. In the case of a Mint auditing a seeder, they can select random chunks of the torrent file to download periodically. This should provide a decent assurance that any individual seeder is actually in possession of and serving the file to other users. In the case of the issuer auditing the Mint, indirectly monitoring the torrent swarm should provide a good enough basis to assess the Mint's honesty. Once a contract has begun and the Mint has started issuing payouts, the swarm should establish a baseline of traffic proportional to the economic incentive the contract provides. If at any time the issuer notices a large decrease in swarm traffic, that is a pretty good indicator that the Mint is not processing distributions honestly, and the contract should be revoked. Neither of these are foolproof, especially in the case of the Mint auditing the torrent seeders, but they should be good enough. At the end of the day, if a seeder is essentially just grabbing data from other seeders to respond to challenges from the Mint, in order for them to do that, the data needs to be available enough for them to grab any random chunk the Mint challenges them to produce. So in such an instance, while actors may be able to dishonestly collect payouts from the Mint without hosting and serving the file, if the file is not actually available, they'd be incapable of gaming the system in that way. I don't believe this is a fatal flaw, as the overall goal of ensuring the file's availability is still met. Overall, Durabit is a very simple system facilitated by a trusted party in the form of the Chaumian Mint, but I think that simplicity is its strength. The amount of funds ever available for a Mint to abscond with maliciously is minimal. And if such an event were to occur, the issuer of the contract can simply revoke the existing one and reissue it with another Mint. I think it provides a very simple and elegant solution to the incentive problem of keeping files seeded using BitTorrent, even during huge drops in demand from users. This episode is brought to you by Nodeless.io. This is the easiest way to accept Bitcoin and Lightning online without having to set up your own Lightning node and manage channels and liquidity, or without having to set up your own BTC Pay server and doing your own merchant web front end and all of this stuff. You can just literally plug Nodeless into WooCommerce and it just works. And all you have to do is plug in your Lightning address or a address to your cold card hardware wallet or anything, and all of those payments will just be aggregated and forwarded straight to you. Even better, there's no long-term commitment, there's no subscription fee, there's no KYC. You literally go plug in your email so you have an account and then just use it. Make a paywall, make a donation page, set up your fundraiser, plug it into your store. It literally is that easy. Go to bitcoinaudible.com/guy to check it out if you haven't. You definitely need to. Like I said, there's zero obligation. There's no subscription. Just go try it. Go sign up. Try it. If you make a donation page, which I literally takes like 3 seconds or 3 clicks, excuse me, post it on Noster and tag me in it. I will send you 10,000 sats. Again, bitcoinaudible.com/guy. The link is right in the show notes. All right. So this article, this is a really great article, but another one by Shinobi that kind of breaks down some technical development. And there has been a lot of stuff lately. And this is something, you know, Lynn Alden actually said this, I think on Noster recently, that she thinks eCash is super undervalued and it is not properly, that she thinks it's going to be a much bigger part of the ecosystem than people are aware of. And I believe the same. Because the idea of being able to be an operator of a service where you do not have to be, you cannot see and, you know, are not liable for, not only that, a service that is regulation agnostic, that is jurisdiction agnostic, that you can just host it from anywhere. This is a pure web service where anybody can just connect to this so that you can just go to the friendliest jurisdiction or you can just do it behind Tor or a VPN, and just like hosting a, it's not even website because it's not got the difficulty of needing that sort of server setup that you would need with a website and port forwarding or hosting with somebody else. It's literally akin to just kind of running a Bitcoin node. And I think especially with, this is super relevant not only to this conversation in the context of like BitTorrent and file sharing, but with Qt and Pear Runtime, which is like node, or Pear.js, that's kind of the nickname that they've given it because it's essentially a Node.js sort of replacement, a built-in replacement that would be entirely peer-to-peer and work with the Qt and Holepunch network stack, is that I think this is going to completely change the nature of how you can provide these sorts of services and hosting content, including websites, apps, and torrent-like data, just like file sharing in general. And of course, something that would be right along those lines would be an eCash mint. But I think it's going to be an incredibly, like, think about it like a private torrent site, right? Is that why wouldn't a private torrent site that, like a private torrent group, why would they not be able to host an eCash mint as well for their users? And then they could do all of their community activity within their community and, you know, trade, you know, even like send cashew or eCash to each other for making requests, for finding old files and reviving things that have suddenly been dead. Like as soon as you start to kind of like really put an economy around this, it gets interesting specifically because there is so much content out there that dies. And I don't mean it just in the context of BitTorrent. I mean it in the context of streaming services and stuff that you can buy on DVD, stuff that's just not available anymore, despite the technology of that should make it so much more available. Granted, a lot of services and a lot of companies and production companies and studios are trying their best to put a lot of their catalog up, but the copyright and the licensing and stuff around so many things is still so convoluted that there are genuinely things that you cannot find anymore in any context. And there's so much attempts at rebuilding those walled gardens and you know, like, oh, this is only available on Audible. This is only available on the Hallmark Channel Plus subscription. And I think we're going to go through, when we have an economy that actually has fluid, uncensorable money, I think we're going to go through another massive disruption phase where those walled gardens start to break away, especially those where licensing only allows something to be available for this one particular period of time. And it also allows us to kind of skip those centralized platforms and services in actually distributing the data itself, and allows direct interaction between the content creator and the content consumer. And I think something like Durabit is actually a lot, not only is this just an attempt to kind of revive the BitTorrent system, but it's also just kind of an indication of how simple a system could be that still puts incentives in the right place, that could have that interaction, a scalable interaction between the user and the content deliverer. And I think Shinobi is right in this system, is that the reason this might work is its utter simplicity. And I think eCash is going to be a big part of this, going back to the idea of a private torrent site offering up eCash, and then think about that they can just bridge out with Lightning, and they can pay from that eCash wallet to anybody in the entire Bitcoin ecosystem, anybody who has a Lightning wallet. And even crazier is that not only do you still get the benefits, the privacy benefits you get massive privacy benefits from by working within the community when you're sending it to another seeder or you're sending it to another peer in your little private community of within the eCash mint. But even crazier is that you also get a very interesting privacy by just using Lightning as a bridge between mints. So if you're sending eCash from your mint over Lightning, what they do is they will have to fulfill that transaction over Lightning. So the amount and timing of that transaction is visible to whoever's fulfilling it over Lightning. So the eCash mint can see any external payments. However, if you were going to another eCash mint and then they are signing a transaction of eCash within the mint, if I'm not mistaken, outside of the fact that the transaction, the transit over Lightning is visible, the receiver on the other end basically still has the privacy because it's within another eCash ecosystem that it is quote unquote redeemed. So I think with a simple VPN or behind Tor, any like normal internet privacy measures for connecting and operating with the eCash mint, the users on each end within the eCash ecosystems or communities still gain their privacy, or at least retain a lot in the face of, or in the loss of sending it over Lightning, where both eCash mints can see the amount going in and out of their eCash pools. There needs to be a better word for that. I guess it would be the mint, but it's not the mint. The mint, it would be the operator. Environments? Nah, that's a terrible... I don't know. We'll call it an eCash pool for now. But think about all the kind of edge case things that can be that have been on the internet, right? How many of the slightly less than kosher or outside of the norm sort of communities that have popped up on the internet? The 4chans, the BitTorrents, the Pirate Bay, these sort of things that are kind of on the fringe and they're kind of pushing the edge of what is acceptable, both from a cultural and from a, and potentially legal, depending on your jurisdiction. There could be things that are just outright illegal that are completely innocuous from a cultural or moral standpoint, like just admitting publicly that you're gay might literally get you put in jail or beaten in certain countries. So because it's quote unquote illegal, should they not have a space online to do that? Now think about what we've been able to achieve in allowing those fringes to take place or to exist online. And now open that up, realize or consider at least how much broader and how much more powerful those communities can become in defending their own culture, their own stance, if they can all run their own payment systems, if they can run their own little monetary community among themselves and enforce their own rules. Again, we go back to the episode of Banks Without Bankers and the Guys Take Follow-Up, where I really kind of dig into this more concretely, is the idea of being able to recreate Dunbar's number or bring things back down to kind of the Dunbar's number sort of social environments where every neighborhood, every city, or every county in the world can exit sovereignly. And so the you have the trust relationships as close as possible to the community that you know and are a part of, so that there's accountability. There's accountability at the social layer, whereas none of it exists when you're talking about a government 3,000 miles away, like as if you could any individual, any of us could possibly influence the president or Congress or anything. It's such a gross four layers away abstraction that we have no control over, and nobody has the sovereign ability to exit. We're all trapped in this giant system of counterparty risk that is further centralizing and getting bigger with time. Bigger because they are trying to, they're having to rope more and more people into their staggering misallocation, their huge imbalance and fraud that they're pushing on all of us. Like, look at the counterparty risk. We are in the greatest debt bubble in the history of mankind. We need the ability to exit at the group, at a group of 100 people. At a group of 200 people. Obviously, the goal is to exit down to the absolute individual. But in the meantime, what can we accomplish when local communities, when small communities can exit unilaterally? They can have their own payment system, their own private internal payment system, where they are even protected in the basic rights to privacy from each other, so that only those that you actually do business with can know and be privy to whatever you are engaging in, or whatever transaction you wish to engage in with those in your community. You know, the privacy is not secrecy. Privacy is the right to selectively reveal oneself to the world. So I think eCash is going to be a big, big part of this. And I really like that it utilizes that eCash Mint sort of setup. Now, there are a couple of major caveats, I think, to whether or not this catches on or kind of becomes a substantial network effect for BitTorrent again. There's twofold. One is that if this requires time lock transactions on the chain in order to facilitate going into and out of the eCash Mint, then I think it is going to be something that works at scale, quote unquote, with multiple people in a larger contract. So maybe a good example of, let's assume we have CTV, and you know what I hope will be in the next soft fork is commitment transactions, where you can split up the value of a single UTXO. So let's say we have one Bitcoin going into this eCash Mint, and there are it's actually divvied up between 20 people who are trying to incentivize this. Well, when we're talking about, since fees are high right now, that's actually a pretty good example to lean on, is if fees are $20 and you're trying to incentivize people for $40 to seed a torrent or make that data available to someone, and you're trying to distribute out eCash, small amounts of eCash, you know, 1,000 sats worth, 10,000 sats worth, something like that. Well, the $20 transaction fee is really going to screw up the plans, or at least just make that not economical at all. So I'd be very curious how, you know, it'd be interesting to see Lightning HODL-HTLCs as a service and not across the network, such that like intermediary jumps. But if you have like a Lightning channel with someone in a community that you actually work with, and you, like, let's say I have a million sat channel with some private BitTorrent group or something that I have, and rather than time locking an on-chain Bitcoin transaction to them, I'm using them to, I just have like an open channel with them. Well, maybe I could do a HODL HTLC for, you know, 200,000 sats within our channel, and set that HTLC at a 2-week deadline, or a 4-week or a 6-week. Like, there's no reason privately between us we can't have a separate time lock for those things. So it'll be interesting to see if, as we move more and more things off chain, it would be interesting to see the degree of customizability, and I guess customization really is, I think, the word for it. Customization of Lightning channels and their uses among the participants, the parties that you are setting up channels with, and the services and things that you are constantly doing business with. Now, on the side of, like, let's say an LSP or something, if, you know, a bunch of this ends up being SDK setups and, you know, using Greenlight and using Olympus LSP and Blix, like all the Dunder LSP, there's a bunch of different LSPs out there now. If in that situation, I feel like, you know, HODL HTLC is going to be like a really difficult setup, because Zeus allows that HODL HTLC to, like, this has been a bit of a thing. It was a kind of a drama on Noster, because it was Zeus allowed you to do HODL HTLC and Mutiny to receive through Zeus. I think that was the order of operations that was going on. And yeah, it was, because Ben was talking about how Mutiny was specifically gave the option to not accept those HODL HTLCs, because what happened is a lot of them were expiring, and then it was causing nodes to have to force close, I believe is what was going on. I didn't really dig into it, but there was like a little bit of a drama back and forth between Zeus and Mutiny, but it's all worked out now. Everybody's friends, and the node is in the phone. There's just risks with things like that, right? Like, there's always a trade-off, and, you know, cascading time locks are always, they have their quirks. So HODL HTLCs might not really be the solution there, but I feel like it would be interesting to see the off-chain sorts of solutions like that kind of get worked out, because as we really have a strong foundation on Lightning, and we have like kind of a solid standardization of the entire ecosystem. We have LSPs very common now, and enough where these things are replicable and kind of like plug and play to start a new community or sub wallet or another like LSP. Like, we kind of have like automatic LSP sorts of software that just makes that base function work relatively well. I think there will be a lot more variety and, like I said, customization in those setups. And I'd be curious how this could change or be configured to work in a more chain data efficient way, which obviously the eCash Mint is a great way to, is a huge and awesome thing to leverage in that context. But we might need another layer of that with something like this. Now, the other reason that I think this could have kind of a lot of headwinds in getting set up is, I think BitTorrent, just the design of BitTorrent, was perfect in exactly what it needed to be for its time. And I think it is outdated now. I think it's the old protocol, you know, similar to, you know, streaming is kind of the new thing, and there was, and it was disruption of, you know, selling physical media and cable news, where you can only watch it at this one particular time and you had to watch it on their schedule. Whereas now, and the idea of pay-per-view was like a feature, and now it's just like, what do you mean pay-per-view? Like, I mean, you can just, you're telling me that there was a time that you couldn't just watch whatever you wanted whenever you wanted? I think BitTorrent is kind of running into that same problem. While building an economy and, you know, and a sort of e-cash trading or exchange system around the availability of information, I think a lot of the limitations of the BitTorrent network is largely why, aside from the concessions of the entire industry really to go to streaming and to kind of change the entire map of how content was delivered, which obviously was the big kicker, but I think the reason why it will be a really uphill battle to bring BitTorrent back is essentially the UX, is the interface for BitTorrent. And I don't mean it in the sense of like, oh, you have to have a client, you have to download stuff. I mean it in the sense that the torrent itself is static. It can't be updated. It's not a live network. And connections are even difficult to make. Like broadcasting out trackers to find torrents because of the way the metadata is even connected or distributed is itself a problem. That's why you need things like the Pirate Bay. You need indexers. You know, one of the things in my attempts to solve the data problem before I ended up the data and file sharing problem for myself, Where now I'm really just kind of using iCloud for a lot of like the things that I need to just work. And aside from the few self-hosting headaches that I've dealt with and just made work because I have more sensitive information that I don't want just put on iCloud, but at least for my photos, I just buy 2 terabytes on iCloud, which I hate. Like it just grinds me. I'm pissed that that's the best solution right now. But all of the other things, like people say, like set up an FTP server, and I'm like, man, as soon as you were talking about breaking out the terminal, we're talking about something that is just largely not going to be reliable. And I have like a local host SMB server. Like SMB is one of the oldest freaking things you could possibly imagine. And the number of times that it just does not work, that I connect and it says, and it just fails and the drive goes away on my Mac or vice versa, it's not working on my Linux, and maybe it's just, you know, OS crosstalk, and I've always just been using separate operating systems, but I just, man, it is absolutely frustrating as hell. And the few times that I have tried to use a torrent, it's so hard to figure out how to get those peers to find each other. And it's part of how the torrent distributes metadata. That's why you kind of have to have these centralized databases with indexes, and you have to have trackers in order to kind of build the network up. And, you know, I have in the past sent myself a file over torrent by making a torrent and then giving the torrent to the other computer and doing all the things to make it so they can find each other. But it's not easy, and it doesn't work all the time. You can't just, if it was such that I could just, like, let's say I've got this file, right? I've got this podcast. I've got a project file. I've got an export audio file. I've got my notes. I've got my thumbnails and my transcription, these sorts of things. I've got it all in a folder. If I could make a torrent file of that folder and just in the torrent thing, and then boom, I'm sharing it. And then I could take that file and give it to my Linux machine and just double click on it and open up the torrent thing in that one and download it. It wouldn't be perfect. It's a little bit of a headache, but that would be worlds better than all of the mess that I've had to deal with. But the problem is, as soon as I change anything in that folder, everything's screwed. And again, that's better than I can get it. Every time I do it for some damn reason, it will add the torrent and it will act like everything's working, but they just will never find each other. Those two peers just aren't connected to the network. Or available, and I don't know if it's port forwarding, I don't know if it's my VPN, but simply put, it doesn't work like I want it to. And every time I try to do something like that, I have to troubleshoot. It's just not a solution. And I think the ultimate solution to something like this will be something that is dynamic, that is live, that requires no server setup or port forwarding or any complicated thing. I think the torrent file itself, the metadata itself, is kind of an extra step that doesn't kind of fly with the way we expect technology to work today. And then in addition, I think if you can get something to work individually, like reliably, quickly, and at high bandwidth between two of your own devices, like two local devices in a very, very small network, I think you immediately have the solution when we start talking about big networks. When we talk about 100 people, when we talk about thousands of people or millions of people, if you can make that peer-to-peer work in that example, the way I have tried to use it in the past, I have used it, like I said, it has worked like that in the past, but it's never straightforward. I always have to do like a couple other things that I don't think, like give it to a tracker and then specifically edit tracker information and try to refresh and download cat. Like it's too much. And if you don't know the inner workings of a lot of the pieces of the BitTorrent system, it's not going to work for the average person. If you can solve that problem where between my laptop and my Linux machine, I can quickly and near instantly share files between those two in a peer-to-peer way without port forwarding or setting up a server or needing an index, and I can change what is with that file. I can basically have a quote-unquote virtual drive that is shared between those devices so that I can constantly crosstalk back and forth, then I think you have taken BitTorrent into the new era. I think you have upgraded it with what it needs to actually work today. This may give it a second boost. This and like Shinobi said, the real value of this is simplicity. You know, it's not always the best and most feature-rich thing that wins. It's the thing that can be set up and is reliable and simple enough that it works, that very often ends up winning the day. And that's one of the reasons why I think Noster has such a potent network effect right now, has a lot of momentum, because it didn't try to solve every single problem. It just tried to solve the central platform problem and solve the problem of making it work. And really, when you get down to it, Noster is a pretty simple thing. It's as bare bones as it can be to make it work. And then on top of that, people are building all of these new NIPs and new event types. And like, look at what is being built on top of it because of how simple it is. And so that's one of the things that I think this really does have in its favor. It's not complicated. It's not some new fancy smart contract thing. It just uses the simplest version of a couple of technologies that we know are there and we know can be implemented, and also give that privacy benefit necessary to do something that's at the fringe. And that simplicity may very well bring it new life. But my inclination is to think Holepunch is the replacement for BitTorrent. And I say that because I just got off two calls. I got off a call with Robbie, a friend of mine who I'm working development on a project with. And we did like a 2-hour meeting video call, and we have our room. I updated a bunch of new messages in my Bitcoin Audible working group with the people who are working with me on the show. And then I jumped into my editor's room and had another meeting, an hour long video call with a guy I am doing specifically a video project with, to go over how we wanted to do it. And, you know, I'm editing and trying to clean up a script. In all of those rooms, I can easily and did. I mean, just yesterday, I share a bunch of files in there for people to download. I'm dropping the script, and I'll be dropping the audio recording into the other room. And those video calls were, it's insanely high quality. They're more reliable than Zoom. I had so many problems with Zoom the last time we did this, and it was just because the person I was talking with had a computer too old to download Keet. But I did all of this over Keet, and all of this is peer-to-peer. All of this is encrypted and directly between devices. I have this on mobile. I have this on desktop. I have this on my Linux machine, and it works. All of the little quirks and bugs in the beta version now are not engine problems. They're not like the fundamental connections or the fundamental drives and the protocol. They are just kind of surface layer display stuff. And it's just because they're updating like every freaking 2 days, making all the features work and cleaning up. There's not any like zombie processes in the background that are just kind of like using more battery than they need to be. It's that sort of stuff. It's all shallow. It's all surface layer stuff, it seems like, that are still the quirks that it has. And like I said, it's beta, so they know it's still lots of quirks. But I just told you, I just did all morning, I did all of the things that I just explained that I did, and I did every bit of it without a hitch. So why would I want to go back to a torrent file, a torrent client, and do all of those things that I used to do with torrent, when just right in that chat, I have a peer-to-peer way to just drop a gigabyte file and you can download it instantly. It is that dynamic conversation. It is that constantly updated information. It is already entirely encrypted and it is key-based. Discovery happens immediately and there's no extra metadata layer or trackers or anything like that. And by the way, for anybody who's not familiar with trackers or BitTorrent and doesn't understand what a tracker means, I'm not talking about like some surveillance thing. It's purely just a way to have certain, I guess maybe this is probably not the best analogy, but it's almost like relays in Noster. It's just it's a discovery mechanism for peers. I realized just as I was explaining it, probably was like, why are people tracking stuff in BitTorrent? Oh my God, this is terrible. No, that's not what it means. Don't worry. But again, going back to Keet, is that it doesn't have any of that and it doesn't need any of that. The protocol basically solves all of those problems natively, and it gives that direct connection to share a gigabyte file, like with ease. And now they're working on the format and to get it get it out for broadcast only rooms. So essentially, you know, you could have a million people follow one person. That one person could offer up a podcast episode, a video, an interview, a movie file, anything like that. And a million people can be watching that stream and download it and seed it to other people, because just having it open is being a seeder. Watching the file, looking at the feed, all of it makes you automatically one who is sharing in that same network. Yet none of them can edit. None of them have write privileges. It seems like that is pretty quick around the corner. That is going to make the distribution of information, and more specifically the distribution of content and like high data, high bandwidth information, far, far easier. And you think about it, what's crazy is that the more that scales, the more people are involved with it, and the more people who are listening in your broadcast network, actually the lower your bandwidth costs are. Because you think about it, if you've got like 20 people in a room and they're all listening to your broadcast, like my podcast, perfect example. If I only have 20 listeners and I'm sharing this over Keat, I'm doing a Hole Punch version of my podcast that only the Hole Punch clients can read. Well, if they are all listening to the podcast at a different time, like at a different time throughout the day, well, then they're not seeding to each other, which means that all 20 of those people are downloading straight from me if I am the only seeder, if I am the only one hosting the content. However, if I have a million people downloading or listening to my podcast and they are all in that room, well, then inevitably there's always somebody else online, which literally means I might only need to seed it to like three different people before another 20 people are already online while those three are online. And then 75% of the download comes from those three other people. And then immediately anybody else who joins that broadcast room can now just be mirrored by all the other users. And the 40th, 50th, 100th, 1,000th, a millionth person, the millionth person who joins may literally never even connect to me as a peer. They just get it from all of the other people in the room. And this is for feeds. This is for a broadcast room for news, for podcast, for YouTube style content. And you can still have indexers. That's the crazy thing, is you can still have that sort of YouTube platform that connects all of the public broadcast rooms. And they are already designing it so you can have native Lightning Network and Bitcoin. And I know, inevitably, especially if eCash becomes like a major part of this ecosystem, eCash is absolutely going to be a part of all of this too. It's going to be too easy to connect all of these things together. But I think when the base protocol works as well and as dynamically as the Hole Punch and everything, the protocol under Keat works, and I don't even know what to call it now. They've got Hole Punch, they've got Pair Runtime, and they've got Hyperdrive or Hypercore. I guess Hypercore is technically the protocol, but it's all the same thing. It's everything on the Hole Punch platform. But when it works like that, and you can start integrating like direct payments, and you can have these sort of broadcast rooms, and you're talking about sharing data, sharing files and things, and now you can do these same sorts of incentive structures and little tricks with all of the things on top of Hole Punch, I really think BitTorrent stays niche, if it stays at all. I mean, I don't think anything really disappears. It will always kind of have its place. Just like, you know, I used news groups quite a bit way back in the day, and I kind of forgot about it. And in fact, the complexity of the setup, I totally, like, there were so many different moving pieces to it when I tried to, I was like, oh my God, that's right, news groups. And it was probably 6 months ago or 8 months ago or something that I rediscovered them and just started looking around, and I signed up for a news group fee. I can't remember how the layers worked, like the different pieces. But I ended up not really using, it was so convoluted that I was like, oh man, this is bringing back memories, but it just was not user friendly. You know, it's own little part of the world now, of the digital world. And I think probably probably BitTorrent ends up there. I mean, to an extent, it kind of is there, but I think it stays there. I don't think it comes back, not because it doesn't have value or it doesn't serve a purpose, but because I think other things are fulfilling that role, are going to fulfill that role in a far better way, and by getting around the issues that it had. Or at least, I guess at the time, they weren't issues, much like newsgroups didn't really have an issue at the time. It was actually just a solution, and BitTorrent was a solution for it, but it already did the disrupting, and now BitTorrent is actually the less convenient option. And I think that's why it's lost so much of its bandwidth. You know, back in 2006-ish, 2007, when the peer-to-peer ecosystem peaked, when kind of the future, the promise of the internet was at its greatest, it was the bulk of the internet traffic. Like, peer-to-peer traffic was like 70% of all bandwidth on the internet. That's crazy to think about. There was an era of the internet that was almost, that was absolutely majority peer-to-peer. Even the original chat apps, Skype and these sorts of things, were peer-to-peer. The intent with Twitter was to make a distributed, the original version of Twitter was to make a distributed app or a distributed social media. But I think both the fiat, the debt, the VC, and the corporate push to centralize everything, the massive incentive to draw everyone into a platform, and then the extraordinary explosion of surveillance capitalism basically screwed up the incentive so badly that there was no way to go back. There was just too much momentum for ever more centralizing and ever more central control. And you know what I think a big, big part of that was? No distributed money. No decentralized money to lean on. No way to monetize or sustain the infrastructure without that central point of funding. And if you have a central point of funding, if you have a central point of like a monetary center, well, then necessarily it can only be as decentralized as the monetary center is, which means that it is as decentralized as finance, which means it is as decentralized as a banking license, and then all of the regulations and counterparties that banks have to adhere to. So it's nothing. It's fully and completely centralized. And any time that it does push out towards the fringe or begin to contest the status quo, it must, the inertia or the weight is always imbalanced to fall back towards greater centralization, to fall back to the higher, the next layer up, layer of control. And I think we see that as a great example is all of the things that we've seen with social media in the 2020s era, and the incredible censorship, the cancel culture, how easy it is for banks to just make money disappear, just take it from people. The trucker protest, all of these things, I think, have just shown how bad that incentive has led the infrastructure to truly be, and how much counterparty risk we carry around with us day to day without realizing it. You know, trusted third parties are security holes, end of story, and we have trusted third parties everywhere. So this is a really exciting proposal. And it's really interesting, and maybe in the short term, it does, depending how quickly something like this can get implemented, it would be really, really interesting to see. And it could very potentially revive a lot of things, a lot of data that was seemingly lost. That would be the really exciting thing to me, is like finding people who go into their archives. You know, there's data sitting everywhere. I mean, there's data and files and media and stuff on my computer that I know there's probably 100 people out there who are just like, I wonder if this is, that you could even find this anymore. But it's not available. Like, I don't just have like a public broadcast of everything that's on my freaking, all of my hard drives and stuff on my computers. So to them, it's essentially inaccessible, even though it is out there. But imagine when those things are incentivized with small amounts of sats. Imagine what we can recover. Imagine how many things we may be certain are deleted and forever unavailable, that there's still a copy out there somewhere. And I think that's the promise of changing the incentives of that sort of an ecosystem and really bringing money into the file sharing environment. And I think the major next era of disruption is to remove the platforms altogether and directly connect the content creator, the software developer, and the people who create with the people who consume. And I think that is a really, really bright future to be really excited about. So with that, a huge thank you to Shinobi for this piece. A thank you to all of you guys for listening and subscribing. Do not forget to share this out. You know, one of the best things and easiest things that you can do with this show is just share it to people you know. And also leave a review. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts. You know, share it out on Fountain, make a clip. I'm actually shocked, by the way. I found out that Fountain is the second most listened to platform for this show. That is really, really awesome. Like, I'm a big fan of Fountain. I love their SAT streaming. But like 10% of my listeners from day to day, or I think it's actually 11% of my listeners are from Fountain, whereas like 60% are Apple Podcasts. So no joke, Fountain is ahead of Spotify for me. That's kind of crazy. So shout out to all you guys on Fountain. Thanks for listening. Thanks for boosting in. And I'm going to try to, when I saw that, I was like, man, I really need to be on top of those comments. So thank you all for the comments. And I'm going to be reading those far more regularly. And lastly, a wonderful, huge, massive thank you to Nodeless.io and to CoinKite and the Cold Card Hardware Wallet for, obviously for supporting the show, but for also just being freaking awesome products and services for Bitcoiners out there and solving their problems. You know, I can't imagine being able to accept Bitcoin easily and then being able to keep that shit safe so that you know it's yours. What two more important things can we be doing in the space? So a shout out to you guys. Don't forget to check them out. Links are in the show notes. And I will catch you on the next episode of Bitcoin Audible. I'm Guy Swan. I love you all. And until then, everybody, take it easy, guys. The universe, our physical universe, has that property that makes it possible for an individual or a group of individuals to reliably, automatically, even without knowing, encipher something so that all the resources and all the political will of the strongest superpower on Earth may not decipher it. And the paths of encipherment between people can mesh together to create regions free from the coercive force of the outer state, free from mass interception, free from state control. Julian Assange.